available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, gonna try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. David is not solo this week. I'm back.
Otherwise, I've gotten very good at impressions. Like, very good.
You are very good anyway, but yes, I got my second shot, kicked my ass. We could have did the show a little bit later. David's like, nah, I'll do the show by myself. And we are now doing it on Sunday night because, I don't know, our schedules are all whack-a-doodle, but we're doing another show. But I'm glad to be back with you, David. I thought you did an excellent job in my absence.
It successfully went up, right? It got successfully uploaded to our feed. And people listen to it. That's all you can really say about anything. There was some erotic fiction in there.
About you.
There was some David Woods slash fic in there. At least that's what the kids call it. So great. Really wonderful stuff. I'm very glad you're back, so I'm no longer harassed by myself.
So if you would just say in general, as popularity goes, like, you have a different personality. I would probably be the most quote unquote popular of the hosts. Is that fair? But no one's ever written erotic fan fiction about me like they did you. So you probably jumped ahead of me.
I think I probably inspire the strongest feelings.
Okay.
In either direction. Like, I would think there are probably a few people who are angry enough to like say words to me on a street here. Among our listeners, but you probably not getting that. And as we can see, somebody, you know, feeling good enough to write some erotic fiction, which great. You know, we take all comers here.
Awesome. Speaking of erotic fiction, maybe not, but I got to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Jared, who's a big bro guy, big UCLA fan, loves David Woods. Got to meet him at Little Shellback Tavern in Manhattan Beach the other day, and he said, are you Ryan Abraham? Like, yes. He goes, I'm a big UCLA fan, but I listen to the Podcast of Champions, so I wanted to give Jared a little shout out. But he's a fan of yours, David.
Great. We love to hear it. We love to hear people walking up to you and telling them how much of a fan they are of me.
See, you're on the up. You're the up and up right now. If you guys want to get in contact with us, if you don't run into us in Shellback, you can do this by email. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is the email address. If you'd rather call or text us, we have three voicemails this week. Crazy. 424-532-0678. Leave us a voicemail or send us a text. You can tweet us at Pac-12podcast, as David said last week. Most likely it's me going to be answering you, but whatever. We'll try. We'll do our best. The website is Pac-12podcast.com. That's where all the old episodes are. David will say don't go there. I'm going to tell you should go there. Reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions if you want to interact. We have a bunch of fans on there, but we just haven't jumped in ourselves lately. We need to do that. Probably won't. But also, if you want to leave erotic fan fiction for either one of us, most likely David, Apple Podcasts, follow us there. Follow the Podcast of Champions. Please rate us 5 stars. Write something funny. You leave us 5 stars, we will read whatever it is, even if it's erotic fan fiction about one of the hosts.
Especially if it's erotic fan fiction about one of the hosts. All right, we've got a couple of new ones.
Okay.
Ryan from Greeley, Colorado. It's not you. It's a different Ryan.
Good.
I know. It's an uncommon name, but
I've not been to Greeley.
Yep. 5 stars? It's a question in his subject line, but he has rated us 5 stars, so it's fine. He said, honestly, I'm only here for the shout out on a podcast. P.S. Sco Buffs. There, hey, you go, Ryan. You get your shout out.
You totally get your shout out. Yeah. Dozens of Pac-12 fans will have heard your name now. So that's great.
Dozens, 20s, possibly even 30s of Pac-12 fans. Ham on Rye, another 5-star review. I'm unsure about this. This is one of the most okay podcasts out there. Ryan does a nice job of keeping things organized, and David seems to participate out of some sense of obligation. Does he owe Ryan a life debt or something? Yes, I resemble a Wookiee in some ways, and I do owe Ryan a life debt. Listen and you won't regret it. Topics include Disney princesses, Star Wars, potential outcomes of school mascot battles. But wait, there's more. Tune in next week to find out how David feels about Rick Neuheisel. Love it. Thank you, Ham on Rye.
Thanks, Ham on Rye. Hey, speaking of, I haven't fired up my Disney Plus lately. No new Mandalorians, but there's a new like Star Wars thing. But I guess it's an offshoot of another one, like the Clone Wars, which is animated. Should I bother? Is that worth watching?
So I watched half of one episode of the animated thing, and I couldn't do it. This was like a year ago, and I was just, and this is just me being like a complete, like, whatever, old dude, whatever. But I'm like, I just can't watch it. It's animated. It's going to be kid stuff. And I know there's a whole probably subset of our listeners who are like deep into like, you know, animated stuff that's for like adults and stuff. And I'm just like, I can't. So I wasn't able to do it. And so then I saw this Bad Batch thing was also, I think, animated. And I'm just, no, not going to do it.
Okay. So not do it. All right. Well,
it's sort of like this. It's sort of like this, Ryan. So I have kids, right?
Yes.
So animated stuff is their province. And it's sort of like this as well in that, so Goldfish, that's like a perfectly reasonable snack for like an adult, I guess. I could not eat Goldfish now because they're my kids' snacks, you know?
Oh.
Animated stuff, that's the province of the children. I'm not getting into that. So I like, even like Simpsons, even like, I don't know, do people still watch South Park? I don't know. I'm not watching that. No animated stuff.
I watch a lot of animated stuff, which is weird. Like Rick and Morty, I'll watch some South Park. I'll watch some Family Guy. No, you don't like Family Guy. I'll do some Simpsons, Archer. Wow. I like a lot of those.
Wow. Do you watch BoJack Horseman?
No, I don't know what that is. What's that?
That's about a depressed horse.
Oh, no. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah.
Check it out. I like Bob's Burgers. Yeah. I don't think you like that one, or you've not watched it very much.
I haven't watched any of this. I don't even know what you're talking about right now. Like Bob's Burgers, whatever.
H. John Benjamin is like, he's got this.
I know.
But you know who he is. Okay. Great voice. He does Archer. He does Bob's Burgers. So I like all those things, but I don't know.
Okay. So maybe this is for you then.
I'm immature, but I might try to watch it.
I've heard good things about the Clone Wars and now this Bad Batch thing. So why don't you watch them?
I didn't know if I should just jump into Bad Batch right away because it's supposed to be like an offshoot of Clone Wars and I haven't seen any of those. And that's like multiple seasons. So I'm like, that seems like a big, you know, I mean, I'm still doing Yellowstone right now. So,
okay.
Have you seen that one?
No, I just got done with I was rewatching Breaking Bad. I can do like one thing at a time.
That's tough. It's tough. Breaking Bad's awesome. Love it. All right, so let's jump into some stuff. We got all the reviews out of the way. I think the first thing we got to talk about is the NFL draft. I guess it was like 2 weeks, well, like last weekend. Overall for the Pac-12, it was, it's the fewest selections, NFL draft selections, that the Pac-12 has produced in 8 years. Less than half as many as the SEC. Pretty big margins by the Big Ten and ACC as well. So 57 players were available last year and then 43 this year. But there were some aspect of some people returned because of COVID. Oregon, we're going to talk about their spring game in a little bit. They had a couple guys that could have been drafted. They come back and there ends up being, you know, the captains of the Oregon team for their spring game. But overall, you know, three first rounders, all three of them had opted out at some point. Elijah Vera Tucker is the only one that came back. Penny Sewell and Joe Tryon from Oregon and Washington, respectively, both opted out, didn't play 2020. Elijah Vera Tucker did opt out, came back and played, probably helped him because he had to play in some left tackle, and he goes in the middle of the first round. So three first rounders, and, overall just sort of like you had one, two, three, you know, three second rounders, five third rounders, and then a bunch of guys go on the last day between the fifth and seventh rounds. Any thoughts, David, overall?
How many total Pac-12 draft picks were there? What was the number?
Let's see. That's a good question. It was okay. Blah 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 blah. There's three of the first round. 28 players total. Yeah.
So, and if Chip Kelly hadn't purged his entire roster, it would have been 30, right?
Yeah, that was first Jalen rounder. Phillips and
Brandon Stevens.
Yeah. One was the first rounder. What
just
was
one
other?
Of my just one of my little takeaways from the list. yeah, I mean, so one thing like. I think it's we've gone over this before, but I think a big part of it is just the lack of success for the Pac-12 in both respects. I think they've done a generally poor job of locking down the West in recruiting, and that's going to generally leave a lot of those talented guys who come out of the West going to other schools and getting drafted out of there. So I don't know that it's surprising in any real way. I think this is another commentary on, you know, not to beat the drum of the two schools we cover just incessantly, but it's another commentary on the lack of recruiting success, the lack of development success from USC and UCLA, and the lack of on-field success, because there is also, unless you are a true superstar, there's very much, I think, a correlation between team success and whether or not a guy gets drafted. I know everyone who's like really big into the NFL draft thinks it's like a pure science, and it really isn't. If somebody's on a good team with good surrounding players, they might get drafted higher than they probably should based on their own individual talent. But I think it's all that stuff. But I think a big part of it is USC and UCLA being, you know, down relative to their history in terms of both talent acquisition and talent development and success on the field. And then you might give a slight, you know, knock to like Stanford as well, which was reliably producing NFL draft talent for a while. And I think, you know, Davis Mills, obviously, but they're not producing it at the levels they have in the past. So I think there's a lot of different fingers to point and, you know, blame to be assigned. But once again, I think it's a large commentary on the top tier in terms of talent, which is generally the LA schools, at least a section of the top tier. I mean, obviously, Oregon is in there and Washington to an extent, but those two schools just being down.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of this. And, you know, we see a lot of Pac-12 quarterbacks go. You only saw Davis Mills. He was the only Pac-12 quarterback selected. Seven other quarterbacks were picked before he was. Stanford did have five picks, though, along with USC and Oregon. So, you know, that's a positive there. John Wilner pointed out that there weren't any receivers, tight ends, or running backs from the Pac-12 selected until Amon-Ra St. Brown went to the Lions in the fourth round. So no offensive skill position talent in the first three rounds. That's a big deal.
Yeah, and that's kind of shocking to me. But I think that's very much feels like a commentary on USC. And for a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, who was that top tier talent coming into school, and I don't know, I have little doubt that he's going to be a good NFL player, to go that low, that's kind of shocking to me. That speaks to the team success more than anything. But yeah, I mean, it's just the talent overall in the league. I think the schools that generally have in the past produced a lot of NFL talent, just not recruiting very well and then not developing their talent very well. And that's, you know, it's the same thing we've been talking about with the success on the field, where you see all these guys in the footprint leaving to go play for Alabama, leaving to go play for Ohio State, leaving to go play for Clemson. That's going to come home to roost, and it is, both on the field and then in this incidental thing, which is, you know, the talent, moving on to the NFL. It's important to recruit well. I think that's a pretty obvious thing. And, you know, some schools are learning that.
Yeah. Stars matter. There was I forget the tweet. So I retweeted it a bunch of times, but they showed a graph of like where recruiting rankings were, you know, where the draft picks were. It's just basically like there was an X and Y axis, and there was a concentration of picks all near the axis. Yes, there were picks that were further out, guys that weren't really ranked very high in recruiting get picked somewhere in the draft, sometimes high, sometimes low. But the concentration is, if you are a higher ranked prospect, you're probably, you know, you have a higher chance of getting ranked, picked higher in the draft. So the all those people that say stars don't matter, I get in arguments with you every year, but stars matter.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now for UCLA, just for one, just kind of to kind of show what I'm talking about here. In the last three NFL drafts, they have had six total picks. In 2018 alone, they had five. In 2017 alone, they had five. In 2016 alone, they had eight. In 2015, a slight down year just because guys were coming back, they were three. And then 2014, there were five. Almost historically low. Like, you have to go back to probably the worst period of the Durrell. Even then, there was no time period where they were that limited in terms of NFL draft talent.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a historically down period for UCLA, and I'm sure it's pretty similar, even if not in total picks, in where they're getting selected for USC.
Yeah, they had one pick in the first 100. They did have an offensive lineman selected in the first round, middle of the first round, for 2 years in a row, but not having anyone else in the top 100, that's not good for USC. They had five overall picks, but just one first rounder, then no one until the fourth round. So that's not a good look either. So, I mean, it's good that Oregon and Stanford each had five, but they just, you needed more. You needed more from the Pac-12. So we'll see. Alabama, they had six first round draft picks as a single school. I think it was eight of the first like 38 picks were Alabama players, and they get a bump, right? Because like what you talked about, but they had a receiver win the Heisman Trophy, and a different receiver on their team got drafted higher. Like, that is some crazy talent going on there at Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely. It's they're participating on a different plane of football existence than not just the Pac-12, but all but like two other teams. So it's just, that's just one of those things you have to get used to. It's just looking at it, like what Oregon did here, it's good for Oregon, but it's not like there's so much that like Oregon and Washington and the schools that have actually recruited will have to do to make up for. And I honestly, looking at USC, I don't even think it's USC. It's making up for UCLA. UCLA is not carrying its weight in terms of producing talent the way it should. And to make up for that, to make the league look better, I mean, it's very much on UCLA to do that. They've been really bad at recruiting and developing talent under Chip Kelly, and that needs to shift.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the NFL draft. It's sad that that's over, because that's like kind of a cool thing to sort of look forward to. I like it. You could talk about it. Something to talk about.
It's you and these people who care about the NFL draft and like the NFL generally that are turning college football into this nonsense thing where there's going to be like a 12-team playoff now.
By the way,
does anyone care about the NFL regular season? Like, really?
Do they? I like it. They're going to have 17 games, maybe.
Who cares?
It did suck that I wasn't around for like everyone basically saying they got to expand the playoff. And I know you and some of our loyal listeners are really not don't expand the playoff fan, but that you guys are like Betamax. VHS going forward.
Obviously the sport has improved so much since the playoff came into effect.
Yes.
Right. Isn't it
supposed to be regional? Isn't it supposed to be like a regional thing where three quarters of the country doesn't care about the sport? Is that what you're saying?
Isn't it so great how the playoff has just fixed every problem that exists in college football?
Eight or like 12 team playoffs, that'll fix a lot of stuff, but it'll be good. But it's okay. I don't need to argue about it. Everyone's agreeing with me. So
that, like, Clemson can just like waltz into conference games and not worry about them because they don't actually have a single elimination to their regular season anymore. It's fine. Yeah. It's great.
I don't think they do right now anyway, but...
Okay, but now they can lose two or three games and still make the playoff.
So I'm just I can sit here on my perch.
As much of the regular season as we possibly can.
Knowing the college football world is on my side, and you and the rest of
The only people who have actually thought about it who are on your side are people who are in the actual money-making business of college football.
Hmm. I don't know. I like being on the right side of things. I'm just happy. This is where we're going forward. It's going to be expanded. All you guys complaining about shouldn't expand, blah blah blah. Like, it's just gonna go away.
You know,
it's
let's make this this beautiful, weird and unique sport, just like pro football. I think it'll be great.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be just like pro football, but we need to make it more.
No.
Very we're just gonna regional right
all
now.
All the formatting the exact same, so that the actual diminished quality becomes, you know, really stark. It'll be
great.
Did
you like some of the rule changing stuff that was going on? I forget exactly what there was, like the overtime rule. Like, now you got to like go for two in the second overtime, and
the overtime rule is pretty stupid. I don't like that. You know, it takes, I think, one of the things that it takes the thing that college football is actually, I would say, successfully done pretty well, figured out in overtime, unlike the very stupid NFL. And now they're trying to make it worse. It's basically my take on it. Yeah. Like, it's one thing. Okay, people have likened the college football overtime to penalty kicks for a long time. Each team gets a turn from 25-yard line. But turning it into each team has to make a 2-point conversion over and over again,
that is penalty.
Is making it like penalty kicks.
Yeah.
Like, that's not – from the 25-yard line, you are recreating a very, very common scenario from the game over and over again. Just doing 2-point conversions over and over again is not. Like, that's just – I don't know. It feels like that's going to diminish what has made for some really fun and kind of silly, stupid – games over the years, you know, those overtimes that, like, suddenly it was a 35-35 game at the end of regulation, and then it ended up 70-70 or something.
Right.
Like, that's just kind of fun and stupid, and it doesn't happen often enough for it to be a problem. So
yeah, they had like one game a decade that they're trying to eliminate. I'm like, if you have one game a decade, like, you don't need to change the rule, you know?
Well, like, this would be a small argument, but it's part of it, even with the playoff argument. Anything that's serving to flatten the silly and stupid parts of college football, I don't know that those are necessarily improvements. Because the silly and stupid is part of what makes college football kind of, I mean, it's what makes it for somebody like me, at least in part, more enjoyable. Obviously, I've got a lot of personal investment more in college football than the pro game, but the flattening of the pro game is what makes it so uninteresting to me. Like, so many of those teams are playing the exact same style of football, and the teams are all so equally talented that the margins can be so minimal unless there is like a drastic scheme shift that only lasts for a couple of years until the rest of the league catches up. It's purity. College football doesn't have that, and it's got silly and weird. And, oh, these kids actually can only practice for 20 hours a week. Let's see what kind of hijinks they get up to. And, you know, just taking what is one of the areas where that kind of stupid stuff can happen and making it less interesting and potentially, and very much so, less high scoring. I don't know. Less interesting.
Yeah. I mean, there's less stuff in the NFL where, like, the Wildcat was, like, hot for a little while. But even that didn't even last, like, a season. Like, college football, you can do something weird, like a spread or whatever.
Chip Kelly reinvented the entire sport, and he burned out after a year and a half in the NFL. Like, completely changed the game in his first year at the Eagles. Oh, my God. And then everyone adjusted, and he was dead in the water.
He was dead.
It's just like that. And, you know, I think we'll see what happens with the Chiefs. But, I just don't think there's any lasting ability to be super unique in the NFL.
Yeah. All right, we got some other news. Utah has a home-and-home series with Wisconsin starting in 2028.
Oh, man.
Toughness, right?
Get your tickets, everybody.
Yeah, but that's like two just tough, run-the-football, grind-it-out kind of programs. Like, that's, you know, I think that's going to be a good one.
It is. This point's been made a lot in the wake of the pandemic year, where games were scheduled literally a day in advance, but what the hell are we doing? Scheduling anything 7 years in advance? What's the point?
We'll be like year 15 of the podcast by then.
Like, do it like basketball and like college basketball, and schedule all of that stuff in like February, the season, like literally February before the season. No one is buying tickets a year in advance. It doesn't matter. Just work this stuff out closer to the season, so you're actually getting the matchups that you're trying for. Like, UCLA at one point scheduled Fresno State as a patsy, like as one of their like gimme games. And then Fresno State hired Tedford and ended up a monster for those games. Would they have really wanted Fresno State on the schedule? Maybe not. Hard to know. But if you didn't like lock these contracts in so far in advance, I don't know. You'd have some wiggle room and some things to figure out. Now, that might be untenable for reasons I'm unclear on. But I think most of those reasons are just because this is how we have always done it. They should stop doing it this way. Schedule closer to the season. Anyway, it is very cool. Utah, Wisconsin. That'll be fun.
I do like if that. It happens. But you're 100% right, though. Like, we need to learn from the pandemic when there's like forceful things happening, like, oh, you could work from home, whatever it is, like the new normal crap that people talk about.
No one smokes at blackjack tables. I learned that this past weekend. Nobody smokes at blackjack tables. It's a great shift. Let's keep that up, too.
Were you in Vegas?
I was in Laughlin, Nevada.
Oh, nice. That's true. You got the partitions up and everything.
Yeah. So these are good changes. One of the good changes was the ease of scheduling in college football.
Yeah. So schedule easier and just do it faster and just make cool things happen. Like, oh, these two teams are hot. Let's play this year.
Yeah. Or like literally leave an open date in your schedule and schedule it during the season. You can do that. We just saw it happen.
Yeah. All right. We got to talk about some spring game stuff too. I know we'll go quick because you don't really like these things. I think these are the last. So we got Colorado, Oregon, Washington, and Oregon State. I think that's it until UCLA, which like just started like a week
UCLA
or two.
Will finish its spring practice sometime in July, I think.
Nice. A couple notes for Colorado. They had their spring game, I guess, 2 weekends ago. Some good quarterback play, but it wasn't from Sam Neuer. So they had the freshman from Texas and then the Tennessee transfer, Brendan Lewis and JT Shroud. Apparently they looked really good, in the game. So I don't know. I mean, this is JT Shroud. Sorry. So he came in from Texas, transfer portal guy. They both looked good. So it could be, the Sam Neuer thing. Remember, if you remember, he was the former safety, or he was a quarterback, switch of safety. It's not a guarantee that he's the starter this year, David.
No, he struggled down the stretch last year. I'm trying to throw myself back into Carl Durrell brain from UCLA years. And my worry would be that he would prioritize experience in this conversation and maybe go with the Tennessee transfer. But I think you almost have to ding any transfer coming out of Tennessee, right? Like
The Pac-12 has seven Tennessee quarterback transfers, right?
Like, yes, exactly.
Potentially starting.
It's you pick Tennessee out of high school, so there's something. Obviously, there's something we need to delve into. But like the second piece is like, no, that you've got some stink on you now. Brendan Lewis, that's his name, right? I'm not messing that up.
No. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. He looked great.
Brendan, not Brennan. Brendan. Brendan. Yeah.
Brendan.
Yeah.
Brendan.
Brendan with a D. Yes.
Brendan. Yeah. Brendan. I'm just going to keep saying it. You know when you say a name over and over and over again and then it ceases to lose all meaning? Or it actually loses all meaning, not ceases. That's where I am with Brendan right now. Okay. Brendan Lewis looked really good at the end of last year. They should go with him. He's an actual dual threat. Make it happen, Carl. You can do it. You can do it. Go with inexperience. You've got it. You've got it in your hands. Just do it.
Yeah. A little bit of caveats as far as spring game goes. Like, so we've seen some spring games where there's some tackling. No full contact in this one. So, there were some injury situations going on. Sam Neuer wasn't out there. Jarek Broussard, stud tailback, he wasn't there. Nate Landman wasn't there. The offensive line was all banged up. So I don't think you're going to make a lot of judgments coming out of what happened in spring football. But I think the one thing we want to watch is who's going to end up being the starting quarterback. Cause it does seem pretty wide open, even though you got a returning starter.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What about Oregon's spring game? I think the big thing out of that was Anthony Brown is still looking good. We weren't sure what was going to happen at quarterback there. We saw Anthony Brown play pretty well towards the end of last season. There'll still be some competition, but I mean, to me, it just seems like he's the, he's been a good leader. He's been vocal there. It seems like he's got the support of the players. He definitely brings a different element, like you said, with the dual threat stuff. So I don't know. I mean, it seems like he's the guy that's next in line potentially to start for the Ducks.
Yeah, he was much more stable at the end of the year for Oregon when he came in. So I think he's definitely your guy to start the year, and then you see what else you have as the year goes on. He didn't like blow me away when I was watching him, but he was certainly better than our man Shug. What? Shug? Shoe.
Tyler Shug.
Shug. Yeah, he was certainly better than Shuff. So, yeah, I mean, I think that'll be something that's maybe ongoing. We'll see if he's still the guy throughout the year, but he was certainly more stable than Shuck last year.
Yeah. It looked like we've seen some like receiver problems there at Oregon where they don't really have a ton, but you got Micah Pittman back, Johnny Johnson, Devin Williams, Jalen Redd. Looks like they're a pretty deep group of receivers. So if like Anthony Brown can,
Jalen Redd in his seventh year at Oregon?
I don't know. I think he's up there.
I haven't been to an AAU, or not an AAU, a 7-on-7 event in the last one I was probably at was the summer of 2015. And I want to say, was Jalen Redd already in school then? Like, what class was he even in? Because I feel like I was watching him in 7-on-7 in like 2012.
Yeah. He's been around a while, but you know, he's everyone gets the extra COVID.
Just the fifth year, but man, I feel like I've been watching him forever.
Is it fifth year, but he gets the sixth year because of COVID, or is it fifth total?
It's his fifth total year. So okay. He was a true freshman in 2017.
Okay.
Man.
Another note, just, you know, Justin Flo, obviously the super stud, recruit, you know, he, was lost last season to an injury, but he did join spring drills late, and he had a sack and 1.5 tackles for loss, 5 tackles total and a pass breakup in the spring game. So just seeing him out there, he's someone I think that could be a difference maker for the Ducks. So if they keep him healthy for the year, it's someone I think that's going to be something big.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So with the Ducks, we also have Washington. They had their spring game. It was a purple versus gold event. I don't know. I mean, I didn't really get a whole lot out of reading about this one. Did you have any thoughts? Purple won 22-13. Who cares? Did you have any thoughts on?
I read a really good tweet that I was CC'd on, which was that Washington's spring game was today. Washington won, and they also lost. and I thought that really, really captured it. Captured my interest in this completely.
Well, I mentioned at the top, so tight end Cade Otton and left tackle Jackson Kirtland were both guys that could have been drafted, and they both decided to return, and they were team captains for the game. And Otton ended up having the first touchdown of the day. So he got, a one-handed catch for a 7-yard touchdown. I think it's good that you get some of those guys back. Washington still had, a few guys drafted. We'll see, Dylan Morris, apparently is still looking like the leader out there. I would guess he's going to win the job too, just kind of like Anthony Brown. And knowing who your starting quarterback is going to be is like a full open competition, like we heard with Colorado. Looks like Morris is still going to be the guy. He's a redshirt sophomore. Yeah.
I swear to God, this pandemic is fully bending time for me, because Patrick O'Brien, not only did he write some great Master and Commander stories back in the, 19th century, maybe 20th century. But I swear Jim Mora was recruiting him at UCLA as a replacement for Josh Rosen. Maybe. I think he was in like the Devon Modster class. He's a sixth year.
He's a sixth year senior, and he's the primary competition.
Yeah, no, it's nuts. It's like everyone went on a mission. It's just struggling with all these guys still being in college. But anyway, yeah. Patrick O'Brien, he was an intriguing prospect out of high school. Didn't follow him at, I think, Nebraska at all. Dylan Morris was good enough last year. So we'll see if O'Brien can compete at all.
All right, and then we have one last one that was just this past weekend. So those were, I believe, the previous weekend, and we hadn't done a show since then. David did a solo show, I think, right before the NFL draft started. Oregon State had their spring game. They had fans there, so the first time fans in Research Stadium since 2019, right? It was only about an hour long, which is a little weird, but they've had some COVID issues, a bunch of players that were out. So I think this, with the depth problems, they weren't going to run as many plays as they originally thought. Maybe the highlight being Isaac Hodgins. He proposed to his girlfriend at midfield after the scrimmage. So congrats to him. She said yes. So and you have anything else on the Oregon State spring game?
No. I thought you really captured the highs and the lows.
If I didn't take the notes, would anything happen here on the show? Probably not. That's why you had such a short show last week, because there was like, well, I did put some notes.
No, you put some notes in there, and I read them almost verbatim.
And that's no. All right. Well, that's all I got. So I think those are all of the spring games, if I'm not mistaken, until UCLA's in July. So we'll go from there.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So we'll have an update on that sometime in the next couple of years.
Nice. Yeah. Hopefully, yeah, by 2022, we will find out what happens at the UCLA spring game. But for now, we're going to take a quick break and come back and answer your questions.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Yes, David, we're back here on the podcast of champions. Did we miss anything? Any spring game notes you wanted to add? You were thinking about it during the break?
No, still have nothing. Absolutely nothing.
So I've got three voicemails, and I think we have like three emails. Would you like to go back and forth, do a voicemail, do an email? How would you like to do this?
Let's just rip off the Band-Aid, three straight voicemails.
Okay. Why don't we start with this one? I don't know what it's about. Oh, I think this is about Boston College and New Balance sneakers, I think. So here we go.
Oh, great.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. Recently, Boston College just signed a new athletic sponsorship deal where they did every sport but football with New Balance. And then they did a separate sponsorship deal with Adidas. And a lot of people said that that was a smart move because it allows them to get more gear for different sports. And also, it gives them an opportunity to make more money on the football side, just because football is more of a revenue-generating sport than track or volleyball. I was wondering if you guys think that that's a smart move, and if you think some schools within the Pac-12 footprint should try and implement a similar deal moving forward. And then just a quick politics question for Dave. Do you think George W. Bush ever makes an appearance at the Republican National Convention again? He hasn't been to one since 2004, I think. So yeah, I just wondering if you think he'll ever make an in-person appearance at one of those again. Thanks, guys.
All right.
What do you think, David?
What do we want to start with? Do you want to start with the Bush stuff?
Yeah, you start with the Bush stuff.
I think it's murky at this point. I think the party is very much still in the post-Trump throes of figuring out who's going to emerge as the next big, focal point of the party. And if it's somebody from the Trump, wing, branch, whatever you want to call it, then probably not. But I think as soon as they like go over to like being quote unquote traditional conservative again, then you'll probably see W at one of these things. But I don't know when or if that's going to happen. But I think they're still trying to ride this Trump thing and seeing if they can get another one, another Trumpy type for 2024. So I wouldn't say anytime soon, but potentially in the future. Yeah.
Yeah. And as far as like the New Balance and Adidas deal, the fact that they did, you know, one deal with all the other sports and then another deal with football, I do like the separation of football because it is so important, and maybe having two deals would be better than one, you know, depending on how it was negotiated and all that. But yeah, that seems kind of interesting. I mean, they're two kind of different athletic brands, right? Like New Balance, I think, do they have like Kawhi Leonard or something? Like they have, like they're kind of a weird, you know, people that, you know, are, you know, the, whatever their sponsors for that, you know, Adidas has a bunch, there's a bunch of stuff. There's a bunch of high school stuff with Adidas. New Balance ones is a little bit weirder, but I actually run in the New Balance shoes. I like that. You go in there and they like test your feet and stuff. It works pretty well for me, but I don't know. It seems like that would be something that you should at least look at and a potential little bit extra of a revenue stream. I don't know. Any thoughts on that one?
No, it's hard for me. I mean, I just don't know enough about the business of these apparel deals to really give a good answer either way. I could see your argument, Perk, that splitting them up potentially gets football more, but I don't know. Maybe there's some kind of if you get everything, you get sort of a premium, you know, like if New Balance got football, they would have paid, you know, X percentage, even above what they would have done for just like the extra apparel. I don't know. So I think this was maybe dictated by football because they didn't want to go running around in New Balance cleats. I remember at UCLA, guys, even with Adidas, they were wearing Nikes on the field and they would draw with Sharpies over the swoosh.
Really?
Because they didn't want to even have Adidas. So a lot of these dudes have real preferences as to what they're wearing. So I could see that being important for football, and they can maybe dictate a little bit more than the other sports since they do bring in the most money. The other thing I would say with the Bush thing, and just because I don't want it to be taken a little bit wrong, that's based off my assessment of his own personal proclivities here. I think he doesn't want to be associated with the unpalatable Trump wing. I think he's very bad too. And all this like remaking his, you know, personality and all this other stuff in the wake of Trump is complete nonsense. I mean, he's still the guy who completely invaded a country in an unjust war for trumped up reasons that didn't actually turn out to be at all true and actually turned out to be very much lies. So he's a very bad person and a very bad president, as are most presidents. But I think he has his own personal sense of standards that conflict with what the Trump wing of the Republican Party is currently doing.
Yeah. For all those Bush fans or Republican fans out there, don't worry. David bashes both sides of the aisle equally when it comes to presidents. He likes Abraham Lincoln. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, none of them. They're all pretty bad.
Yeah. So I saw George W. Bush this morning. I was watching like on the Golf Channel. I forget what it's called. Some kind of cup where it's like amateurs from United States going against, it's like match play against amateurs from Great Britain and Ireland. And the USA was up. I don't know. I didn't see what happened in the afternoon, but they interviewed him there. So I saw an interview with him this morning. But yeah, it's funny. Like,
was he golfing?
No, he wasn't golfing. He was just like an ambassador or something or whatever like that. But yeah, I mean, he's, you know, there was people that like hated him, but then, like if you're from the, you know, the Democratic side and you really hated George W, but then you like compare him to Trump and they're like, oh, he's actually kind of nice, you know, compared to, like,
well, this,
it's funny.
This goes into my whole theory about it, which is that, I mean, obviously there was a lot that was bad about Trump, but I think for a kind of shockingly large subset of people, it was simply that he was rude and uncouth. And then they looked back at George W. Bush and they said, oh, he wasn't anywhere like this because he wasn't rude and uncouth. I think for a lot of people, it was simply the aesthetics of the man, which is shocking and appalling that that's the thing that gets you, not the actual functions being done. But I think that's the only obvious takeaway for people who have now decided to, completely whitewash the history with Bush just because of how he compares to Trump. Well, the only fundamental difference is aesthetics. And so I think that's a real commentary on those people and their actual priorities in this.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. We got another voicemail.
What's up, guys? This is Evan from Tempe. I had a question about the Pac-12 South. So basically, like, I've seen, you know, arguments, you know, that can be made for teams like ASU and UCLA to win the South next year, even though it seems like most people have USC favored, except some people that I think could have ASU. You know, I've even heard arguments for, like, Utah. So I just kind of want to know if maybe people are kind of not including Colorado in those arguments, and if that's kind of not right in the sense that, you know, they were the second best team in the Pac-12 South last year. I know they weren't very good as a team, but I've seen a lot worse teams than Colorado in college football last year. So, you know, I just kind of want to know, you know, with ASU, it's kind of like, if Herman can be the guy and, get that returning talent to play their potential, they could be pretty good. And, you know, UCLA, it's about, you know, could they, edge out some of those close games and win some of them, you know, maybe take the South and Utah, you know, can Kyle Whittingham kind of do his thing and get them back to win the Pac-12 South. I just kind of want to know if people are kind of sleeping on Colorado. So do you think that Colorado could beat USC next year? And do you think that they have a shot to win the Pac-12 South? So thank you, guys.
Great question from Evan. I think the South is, I don't think it's sewn up for anybody. I think with Colorado, for me, it's going to be what they can figure out at the quarterback position. If it is Brendan Lewis and he can actually provide a little bit of that dual threat capability, that can be a game changer. They return, I would say, quite a bit from last year's team. So it's not as if they're, you know, lacking in ability. What I would say last year is that their performance in terms of record maybe didn't match up with what they were looking like analytics-wise. So there's a little bit of skepticism about whether they can sustain that for a full 12-game season. But if they lock down the quarterback position, then, you know, a lot of things can fall into place pretty quickly. There's a reason it's the most important position on the field. And if they have a guy who can really do it, then, all bets are off.
I think with Colorado, I mean, I'm not saying it was smoke and mirrors last year, but they definitely outperformed where I thought they would be. And if they can do the same thing this year, that'd be great. I just think you're looking at Utah. I feel they're rising on my board a little bit. I think that they've done a good job in the transfer portal market. I think both lines are going to be good. I just feel like Utah's going to be a tough team. ASU's got a lot of talent. They just seem to be trending in the right direction. They haven't broken through. They're like still a 7-5 team all the time. USC's probably the most talented. You know, will they've improved their coaching staff, but they still got Clay Helton. Are they going to like blow some games that they, you know, their schedule's not that hard. Are they going to blow some games that they shouldn't? They're probably going to happen. UCLA was trending upward for sure. Do they keep that going? Do they look like a legit team that could run the football with a dynamic quarterback and playing better defense and all that? So yeah, I would put the ASUs and the UCLAs and USC ahead of where Colorado is, but they proved me wrong last year. I mean, it was a shortened season. It was weird. But now that you're not really like quarterback situation is unsure, all of that, I still think they're going to kind of be on the outside looking in. I love what Arizona's doing, like as far as building for the future, but it's for the future. You know, this is like you're putting in the foundation and other people are like, you know, decorating the houses. Like Arizona has to start from the ground up and somehow dig out of this 12-game losing streak hole and get it going in the right direction. But I would still say, it's going to be ASU, Utah, and USC for me in the top half of the Pac-12 South.
Yep.
We got one more voicemail. I think this is a playoff one, so we can get a little more discussion about this. Here you go.
David Woods, This is Andrew in Seattle. Just listened to your solo episode without Ryan, and I'm calling to commend you on the always reliable rebukes of the idea to expand the college football playoff. You understand the issue deeply. We know we can count on you. Hashtag stay at four.
We love nice. It. It's like a cult. It's like a cult.
It is funny. It's like it's a cult following. Everybody's wrong, but hey, you know, it's kind of, you guys are all going to go down with the ship. It's perfect.
Well, no, it's hard when you see everyone trying to ruin a thing you love for like just basically no reason beyond like, yeah, it'll be great. You know, it's tough. It's tough to handle.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. It can't get much worse for the Pac-12 right now. I would think
actually
whatever's going on right now.
Actually, it totally can. It totally can.
I don't think
an 8-team, you know what an 8-team, 12-team playoff is going to include? Like half the goddamn SEC.
True. But it will include the Pac-12, which...
Yeah. So what are the... So, okay. Let's just do some quick math. When the Pac-12 team gets in, right, because it's actually good enough to make a 14 playoff, it's got, what, maybe a 1-in-4 chance, maybe a little bit less, depending on the quality of the teams, right? Right?
Yeah.
What does it have in a 12-team playoff when it's going against 7 SEC teams? Like, what are the odds the Pac-12 is emerging with more titles in that scenario than they were in the 14 playoffs?
I think you're discounting the fact of making the playoff. And I feel like on the recruiting side, and I think Wilner's wrote about this and other people have, and a lot of people are talking about it. If you think a prospect is going to go to Georgia or Alabama or Clemson because they have a chance of making the playoff, do they not necessarily move across the country because they can make the playoff on the West Coast? Like right now, you can't make the playoff on the West Coast.
You can't decouple this into theory when we have the actual practical application of this. Do you think USC and UCLA's problem in recruiting is that they haven't made the playoff? Do you think their fundamental problem in recruiting is that they haven't made the playoff?
No. I think it's a problem. I don't think it's the end all.
Is it even in the top three of their problems?
There's a lot of problems.
Their problems, they start with the two guys who are their head coaches, and they stream down from that priorities at the program level that have nothing to do with whether or not they're making the playoff. If they simply had good teams, if they were simply going 9-3 reliably at UCLA, it wouldn't matter if they were making the playoff or not. They would still be recruiting top 10, top 15 classes. This is where it gets silly for me, because it's not as if Oregon and Washington are feeling ill effects from, in Washington's case, only making the playoff once. They're recruiting better than they have in, I don't know, like just generally speaking, in like 20 years. Oregon is recruiting at a level consistently it never has before. These aren't ill effects of the playoff. It's simply, very simply, that the two schools that have had historically the best success recruiting in the Pac-12 and maintaining talent, and the ones who are most responsible for whether California talent is leaving the region, have sucked for like 10 years now. For UCLA, it's brief blip of 3 years with Jim Mora era, but sucked relative to their history, UCLA for 20 years. That's the problem. It's not whether or not they're making the playoff or not. It's just a complete canard. You can throw that away. It's these two teams have not held up their end. And for that, you know, the Pac-12 is getting reliably and justifiably castigated by college football media, but it has nothing to do with whether or not they're going in and being a sacrificial lamb to lamb to Alabama.
I think it's still important. I mean, with the two of the top players on the West Coast from the state of Washington, and one's going to Ohio State and the other one's probably going there. I mean, like, that doesn't have a lot to do with USC and UCLA, but it seems like you're getting away from the West Coast because there's no one on the West Coast that's going to be contending. I still think it's an issue, you know, how significant you can argue, but I think it's a real issue.
Yeah. But the thing is, it wouldn't be a major issue if you still had the two schools that are historically the ones who locked down California actually doing their job, and they're not. And when they don't do that, and when USC is down and not – because USC, with the way it recruits, it doesn't matter if the whatever the Pac-12 was making the playoff every year or not, they would have the talent to do so basically every year because of the way they can recruit. Why are they not doing so? Because they've hired Clay Helton, and for whatever reason, the school will not fire him. And that's the problem. UCLA reliably in history recruits at a top 15, top 20 level. Under Chip Kelly, they're recruiting at a top 35 level. Okay, that's going to diminish your potential as not just a playoff contender, but as a reliable, you know, maintainer of talent, developer of talent, and, you know, keep you from, you know, consistently making big bowl games. It's just all this stuff combined that's making it so the Pac-12 has a lower reputation. And it's not just those schools. Stanford is also down relative to where it was 10 years ago. It's just, there's a lot of contributing factors that have very little to do with whether or not more Pac-12 teams have made a four-team playoff. And those aren't going to be solved if you suddenly put last year's Oregon team in a 12-team playoff to get smoked. Like, that's not going to solve anything. I think it's a silly idea that that in and of itself is going to have anything beyond an infinitesimal effect on talent development or talent acquisition in the region.
All right. Well, I think we agree. The expanding of the playoffs makes the most sense. So let's
go. I will fight you. I will fight you to the death.
That's it for voicemails. You want to switch over to emails?
I would love to. So what do we got? Disaster?
Yeah.
This is from Frank in Sacramento. Disaster! 2 exclamation points. Terrible draft for the Pac-12. I think Alabama had more players picked in the first three rounds than the whole Conference of Champions. Thanks, Larry. This is one of a few things where I would not pin really any of the blame on Larry Scott.
Yeah, I don't think this is a Larry Scott thing. I mean, it's sort of like recruiting in this cycle when the Pac-12 primarily relies on the state of California, and the state of California did not have senior seasons for their players. They had some spring football. I mean, the Pac-12 starting later, having fewer games, I don't think that helped either. Now, it did help that you're going to have a bunch of guys coming back that maybe wouldn't have, that would have left if they had a full season, but I don't think that helped the Pac-12 either.
No, it certainly didn't. But yeah, I mean, this is what we talked about earlier. I don't think this is not something that's controlled at the conference level. It's simply the schools have not done a good enough job recruiting and developing talent.
Yeah. Speaking of, we haven't really talked about the Pac-12 commissioner stuff, huh? Wilner's been doing a good job of that, but it seems like my confidence in the Pac-12 hiring somebody good has waned a little. What about you?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. It's taken a while. And Larry's up in like 3 weeks, right? Is it June 1st or is it July 1st? I forget.
I think it's July 1st. I think it's the end of June. So it's coming up.
It's definitely coming.
Maybe they won't have that graceful transitional period with him where he's going to be able to educate the new commissioner on everything he needs to do, which I say is great.
He's still getting paid, right? So if he has to go like an extra month, like, yeah, you take your $5 million and stay an extra month to help the new guy.
Or don't.
Oh, yeah. Get away.
Yeah, you could also do that.
No. All right. That's our commissioner update for the Champions. We'll probably talk about more about that next week. Improving Pac-12 football is what Peter from Vancouver, Washington wants to talk about. He says, gentlemen, I listened to Dave's comments about expanding the playoff on the last podcast. Dave, I used to agree with you about expanding the playoffs not being a good thing, but over the last year, I have changed my position. Hold on. Cheers to you, Peter. I do agree, Dave, that the only way the Pac-12 teams can get to the level that they would need to win a national championship is to play better. You're right that the Pac-12 teams have not been at that level recently. But to get to that level, two things need to happen. Coaching needs to be better, and teams need better players. Some Pac-12 teams may need more of one, but both would help any team. The question is, how can Pac-12 teams improve in both areas? That's where I think the playoff can help. In surveys of some of the top recruits, two reasons for choosing a school stand out for many of these recruits: getting to the NFL and playing in the college football playoff. Dave, you might not agree. He doesn't. But you need to put yourself in the mind of those top recruits. If the Pac-12 is constantly shut out of the playoffs, then there are going to be many of the top recruits that will not be able to attract. I don't think he put that correctly. But okay, if the playoffs are expanded, then that reason goes away, and eventually some of those top recruits will play for Pac-12 schools.
Hang on. I got to pause right here because I will forget this point by the time we're done.
Okay.
You're Peter, when Alabama wins the national championship, do you think it results in a recruiting uptick for Ole Miss? Do you think it results in a recruiting uptick for Mississippi State? It results in a recruiting uptick for Alabama. That's it. When LSU makes the playoff and wins the national championship, it results in a recruiting uptick for LSU. They don't sit there and say, oh, LSU made it, now I'm really going to consider Vanderbilt. And the same would be true in the Pac-12. There are only, I think, four schools in the Pac-12 who would have a reasonable chance of making a theoretical playoff 10 years from now, which are Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA. Yes, other teams can catch lightning in a bottle. Absolutely. But if you're looking for the four schools that have the year-in, year-out potential because of their recruiting base, it's those four. And those recruiting bases do not change based off of any of these weird vagaries. Their baseline level is enough that they could potentially be a perennial playoff contender. The problem is coaching quality, coaching instability, all that stuff. USC doesn't have it. UCLA doesn't have it. Oregon may or may not have it. Cristobal's certainly a good recruiter. I think it's up in the air still whether he's that caliber of coach. And Washington may not have it in Jimmy Lake. But that's the problem. And it's not going to benefit ASU for Oregon to make the playoff this year. It really isn't, aside from probably some money. But it's not going to help them where, like, a guy's going to be like, oh, wow, Oregon made the playoff. I'm going to go to Tempe. That's not how it works. When the recruits are talking about, I want to go to that place for the college football playoff, what they mean is, I want to go to that place because they keep winning national championships, because the place they're talking about is one of Alabama, Clemson, or Ohio State. The way to stop that from happening is for USC to stop shooting itself in the foot, be that team again, for Oregon to finally break through and be that team, because certainly their talent is now at the level where they should be pretty damn close to that team. Have Washington not completely blow the end of the Chris Peterson era, and maybe they still won't, who knows, and have UCLA actually behave like UCLA. But until those things happen, it's not going to matter whether you expand this thing or not, because the teams that get into the college football playoff, they're not going to be winning national championships with any consistency because they're not good enough. You have to be good enough.
I would say, like, if we look at the ACC, say Clemson wasn't a perennial power, I think Clemson being in the playoff every year probably helps Miami and Florida State and North Carolina. I think it helps those
in what way? Because let me tell you,
they're competing with a team that's trying to win championships.
Let me tell you about the ACC. It's a worse league than the Pac-12. If Clemson was truly lifting all boats, we would be seeing something different.
Yeah, I mean,
Clemson is not resulting in a recruiting uptick for Duke. They're not resulting in a recruiting uptick for NC State.
For like Miami and Florida State, I think it helps.
No, they're not. More. Demonstrably not. And if they were, then we would see the ACC becoming a better league than the Pac-12. But if you take away Clemson, they're not.
I mean, I think Miami's like a preseason.
If you take away Oregon in the Pac-12 and you take away Clemson in the ACC, the two best teams in each league, the Pac-12 is a superior league to the ACC. And that shouldn't be true if Clemson was actually lifting all boats. They're not.
I mean, Miami is, I think, preseason top 10 team right now. I mean, they're. I think just having that kind of power in your league does do some boat lifting. I think there's some of that there. But, I get what you're saying.
But my main point is, and it remains, and I think it's not negated by Peter's well-made argument here, and we're going to read the last two paragraphs in just a second. The teams just need to be better. And until you're actually winning national championships and in position to play competitive games in the college football playoff, then I don't really see where this is going to result in a significant recruiting uptick, even for those teams. They need to be better to, you know, get better.
Well, Peter continues, Dave, you're right that at first Pac-12 teams may likely get stomped by some of the top teams in the playoff, but that is how they're going to learn how to play at an elite level. And the more top recruits that play for Pac-12 schools, the better they will play, which gives them a better shot at becoming elite enough to win a national championship.
This feels, Dave, this is now feeling like an underpants gnomes argument, to steal a South Park, which is, you know, step one, you steal underpants. Step two, and then step three is profit. But we're missing the step two here, which is why are the top recruits coming to play for Pac-12 schools who are getting stomped every year in the playoff?
Yeah, well, if the argument is if they make it, you're gonna bring more, but we'll see. But he says, Dave,
there are now 12 teams making it.
Yeah, then you kind of like it takes
so when,
something.
When Joe Recruit sees in this 12-team playoff, there are 5 SEC teams, 3 Big Ten teams, 1 ACC team, 1 Pac-12 team, and then 2 Group of Fives. That's going to result in the recruiting uptick for the Pac-12. Interesting.
That's the theory. But I'll let me finish his email. Dave, what plan do you have? I'm sorry. Yeah, what plan do you have that you think gives the Pac-12 a better chance at getting elite teams? And he puts in parentheses, playing better is not a plan. Hiring a better coach at USC might, but the Pac-12 may again be considered USC and the 11 Dwarves. So we would need more than just that. Peter in Vancouver.
If you want more than just that, fine. Hire a better coach at USC and UCLA and probably Washington. Maybe kick David Shaw out of Stanford because he's not doing his job there anymore.
He's a good analyst on the NFL Network.
I don't know. Do those things that maybe free up the teams that have potential to actually do, you know, playoff caliber stuff. They actually are freed up to do so. But those things need to happen. That is the plan. USC needs to fire its coach. UCLA either needs to see Chip Kelly win 9 or 10 games this year or move on. Those are two things that absolutely need to happen. That is the plan. There isn't a weird plan where, oh, okay, we're just going to free up more spots in the playoffs so that a Pac-12 team can get in against 5 SEC teams and 3 Big Ten teams and another ACC team and 2 Group of 5 schools and say that that is going to be the panacea that fixes everything. It's not. What's going to fix everything, or at least as much as things can be fixed for the Pac-12, is if USC starts behaving like USC again, UCLA starts behaving like UCLA again, and Washington gets over this immediate blip that they've had with Jimmy Lake, which, again, still a lot of time to figure it out, but they need to evaluate it constantly and see if that's going to be figured out. And then Oregon needs to be ruthless. If they're looking, because they are now playing very much big boy football in a lot of different ways, and they need to look at the Cristobal era and say, okay, if Cristobal doesn't win, you know, 10 games next year with that roster of pretty much elite talent across the board, we need to start thinking about what the next plan is. They need to start behaving that way. That's the ticket. That's it.
All right. I guess we've got one last email to get to.
All right. This is from Frank in Sacramento. 8-team playoff rules. 1, the college football championship shall consist of 8 teams. 2, first-round playoff games will be held at the 4 highest TV-rated college bowl sites over the last 20 years, not including the traditional New Year's Day game sites. 3, second-round games will be rotated among the 2 of the 4 traditional New Year's Day game sites, Rose, Orange, Fiesta, Sugar. 4, the championship game will be held in rotation at one of the 4 traditional New Year's Day bowl sites. 5, the first 5 teams selected for the playoffs will be made up of the champions of the 5 power conferences. However, no conference champion rated outside the top 10 will participate. The remaining 3 slots may be awarded to very high-ranking others in the Power 5 conferences, a very high-ranking Notre Dame team, or one or more non-Power 5 conference champions. 7 teams will be seeded by ranking. However, should one conference have 3 teams in the first round, 2 of those teams must play each other in the first round. Frank in Sacramento.
Frank, I don't like the if you're a champion outside of the top 10. I think if you're going to do champions, you just have to do all the champions, because then there could be, you know, with the rankings, like, you know, you got like a third, you know, third in the, say like LSU is like third in the SEC West or whatever. And, but they're still ranked number 9, and like, you know, like Oregon wins the Pac-12, they're ranked number 11. Like that LSU's getting in and Oregon's not. Like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I love the idea of Rick Neuheisel's 6-6 2011 UCLA team having a chance at the playoff heading into December. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, especially if they had enough gloves, boom, they're in. I like them.
But that's the thing that's gross about this when you do the auto bids, because suddenly you're making this at the whole argument for this entire stupid thing going from the bowl games to the BCS to the college football playoff was to find your two best teams, to really narrow it down and get your two best teams. And when you start doing auto bids, you're very much not doing that. When you're making it possible for the team, because all these conferences are pretty much in divisions now, you're making it so the weaker division has an advantage to potentially make the playoff every single year, where a team that's not good enough is going to be one game away from the playoff every year. Now that makes it fun, exciting, the whole thing, but you're getting even further away from making sure that the best teams are playing for the national championship, which was the entire stupid point in every single revision of this stupid system since they did away with just the pure bowl game thing, where it was just the AP poll told you who won at the end. So this is a way to make it more like the NFL, to make it more like other professional leagues. But it's not a way to make it, you know, who the best team is. I don't love the auto bids. And on the flip side, I used to be pro playoff expansion. But when you sit there and think about what the auto bids actually mean and think about how many undeserving teams, I mean, there was that year that Alabama won the national championship because it was very clearly the best team and they didn't win their conference. And in this scenario, I don't think they'd be left out, but there's a chance. You want it to be so that the very best teams in the sport can make it in, and not just off of one stupid blip in a conference championship game. But also, you don't want Duke in a national champ in a playoff. And you know, if they win their side of the division, they could.
I've heard some people talk about getting rid of the conference championship games altogether, so you win your conference just in the regular season. Any thoughts on that?
I think that'll probably be a non-starter. They would have to come up with a lot of money to pay off the leagues to make that worth it. I'm not entirely opposed, but you've got these monster leagues where the unbalanced schedule is going to be I mean, it already is difficult to handle year in and year out because you're just not playing the same teams. Ideal world, you would be back to like 10 team conferences so you can play a true round robin, but that's, you know, never happening again. But that's the problem there, is that, you know, Alabama might not play the best teams in the SEC one year, whereas, you know, Florida might get stuck playing, you know, a bunch of really good teams in the SEC. And if you do away with the conference title game, you might not even see the two best teams in the SEC ever play, or for that matter, any other league. So I don't know. I think I like the conference championship games as they are in college football. But any scenario where they're going to 12 or 16 is probably going to necessitate cutting something. And it might very well be the conference championship games. But that's where you get into, this is going to have not just like meaningful stakes, meaningful stakes implications for the regular season, but it might actually cut into the actual number of games that you're able to watch of your team if they're not very good. If they're like a 8-win team and they're not involved in the playoff, well, maybe there's no longer a conference championship game for them to get blown out in, but it's one fewer game that you might be able to watch your team play in. And this will also serve to devalue bowl games even further, where they are just pure nonsense exhibitions at the end of the season rather than a meaningful finishing point for your team. Every bowl game will suddenly be the Las Vegas Bowl.
Yeah, and not really mean much. Okay. We can disagree. We will. And we're going to see a college football playoff expansion, so I'm happy about that. But anything else, David? I think we probably should wrap it up.
Let's wrap this up.
We'll do it. That's going to finish things off. We tried to keep it tight. What do we go, like hour and 15 minutes or so? Yeah, not too bad. That is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham, and we are the Podcast of Champions. We really appreciate you listening to our little show. Hope you enjoyed it, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.